Alan Erskine Bear, and I'm doing Year 12 at Berwick Secondary College. For my history option this year, I am interviewing Mr. and Mrs. Adamson of Railway Avenue, Beaconsfield. The interview was recorded on September 10th, 1990, at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Adamson. The aim of the interview was to find out about the local residents of Beaconsfield who went to war and what their experiences were, and those people who stayed home and helped out the soldiers. And the interview runs approximately 20 minutes, and Mr. and Mrs. Adamson are lovely people, and they were wonderful to talk to, and they've really helped me with my option. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Adamson. I'm Helen, and I thank you very much for having me in your home today and taking part in the interview. Thank you very much. To start, how old were you when the Second World War began?
Oh, I must be 13, 14, something like that.
Okay, what type of feeling did you have when you heard Australia would be going to war?
Well, didn't know. Just didn't know. Apprehension. Fear, I suppose, you know. We didn't know. Didn't know what was happening.
Can you describe the atmosphere in the Beaconsfield area at the time? Like, what were other people like about the war? Were they scared or were they...?
Oh, well, most of them were, I suppose, because a lot of them... See, it was apparently a very small town at the time, and most of the people, like, see, well, they'd all returned fellas, and my father was, and uncles and that, and, you know, we'd heard of them what had happened, and all these people were still around, and most were pretty, you know, they sort of wondered what was going to happen after... Because, you know... Pretty soon after the First World War, it was only about 20 years.
And the First World War, you thought that was like the last war to end all wars, is that right?
Well, they always said it was going to be, didn't they? It was the war to end all wars, and here they were stuck in it again in 20 years, you know.
Did you fight for Australia in
no,
the Second World
too,
War?
No, I was too young.
Did you know of anyone that did?
Oh, I knew most of the fellows that went from here.
Did you have any brothers? Or
yeah, I had a brother and an eldest brother in the Air Force, and the other brother was in the Navy, in the latter part of the war.
And how long were they there for, at war?
No, my eldest brother must have went in 1942, I think it was, or 1940. He went in and he was an air crew and he studied. You had to do sort of exams for 6 months or so, or what it was, or used to go to night school and everything, and then he went in and, you know, he trained all around the place. He just missed going overseas on this, an air training scheme. They used to call it the Empire Air Training Scheme. They trained him in Canada, I think it was. He just missed out on that. And like, no, then they were left here.
What was his name?
Bill.
Okay. Can you explain your personal involvement? Did you do anything to help out or anything like that in Beaconsfield? Or maybe Mrs. Adamson, like to help the soldiers when they came home and they were at war?
Well, it's a very close-knit community here. They give everybody a send-off, you know, to go, home, you know, be packed to the hilt. And it was the same when they came home. Of course, once they didn't come back here, a lot of people moved away during the war. See, we were stuck at, right? When I say a lot moved away, I can always remember Bob Roberts, a fellow that was here. He went, his wife had two little girls, and she went and looked after her two brothers. They were bachelors, they had a farm, a place called Bellying out of Backish Marsh, you know, and they stayed there. Well, Bob came back, they never came. Like, he came back from the war and then they went and got on a farm. And there was another fella, I just saw his brother dead in the paper the other day, Jack Dawes. You know that Dawes?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he moved away. Like, his wife, they moved to town, their relations and all that.
He moved
just close to school, yeah. Like, it was, well, see, the Grogans went too during the war, didn't they? They never came back here to the town, like, quite a lot. Sort of moved away during the war. They moved either to Melbourne or elsewhere.
Yeah.
See, out here, you couldn't There wasn't any work much in Dandenong. There was no factories in Dandenong in those days. You went through Narre Warren, and there was just a few houses there. There was Bailey's old school down near the railway line, and there was a bakery up on the road and a bit of a shop. And Hallam, there was only the pub there and the hall opposite, on the opposite side, a bit towards Dandenong and the school, and then there was on the pub side going along the highway, there was only one other place between till you got to the South Gippsland Highway, you know, where General Motors and the pickle factory is, you know, Holland's would be called, and those places in Nashville. There was nothing there, not a thing, you know, and see, there was no industry around here, like most people went to Melbourne, kind of thing, you know, like work. You get work in town, you need to get to have a sort of office job, you know, 9 to 5, mm-hmm. There's a train. You can get in there till about 8:45, and then left again about 6 o'clock to come home at night.
Did the women make things for the men, for the soldiers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had the comforts fund. You remember that? They used to send parcels to all the fellas.
Make Christmas cakes.
Christmas cakes. No, oh, they backed them up. Don't worry about that. Too right they did. They were
made socks
and all that sort of thing. A lot of the younger women.
Balaclava.
Yeah, knitted all in. They were knitting all the time. No?
What attitudes did the women and the friends and relatives at home have about the war?
Well, they were all eager to help. You know, weren't they?
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all the residents were eager.
Oh, yes, yeah, so you'd have to say that. They were pretty, all the places.
With the sister Susie, so that was all the girls around the district that have the hall.
Mr. Rob Dances, the comforts fund him every couple of weeks.
Every couple of weeks,
every Saturday night, something like that. They'd have dance or something like that.
Mrs. Robertson.
Mrs. Robertson used to be in the post office here. She heard two daughters were great workers in it. And Mrs. Robertson, that. Two down here at the station, railway station, two Dawson girls that were at the time. Jack never came back from the war, unfortunately.
If you were a young man in the 1990s, would you go and fight for your country in the Middle East if war erupted?
Oh, I think so. I think perhaps I don't agree with this bloke. I think I jumped in a bit quick, but I agree with it. I think it's a very similar system, very similar situation to what Hitler was in, you see, and that's what caused a lot of the trouble. They appeased him, and he just wouldn't be stopped. Mm. I don't agree with what went on in Vietnam. I think that was
you wouldn't
scandal.
Go to Vietnam?
Oh, no. That was just an internal thing. Because, I don't know, perhaps this thing over there might be, you don't know what goes on. I think Iraq once, apparently they've been squabbling over this all the time. But
you know, so do you think back in those days, if you were asked to go to Vietnam, would you have not gone, you would have tried not to go, even if...
Oh, yeah.
Would you be one of these people who went out and... Protested?
No, I didn't get to that stage, but I was I didn't agree with it. I didn't agree with just pulling Ellie's out of the hat, and, you know, just because your birthday's on a certain thing, I think it should be all in or none in at all type of thing. And, you know, and then when they got them there, they just completely forgot about them when they came home. This is part of the problem for them. And also, it was a no-win situation. In a town, you know, the town's half divided, and, you know, they don't sort of...
The Second World War? Was there big celebrations in the Beaconsfield area when they came home?
Oh, yes, the council had a big turnout up at a couple of different times because blokes come home different.
Yeah, they gave them welcome home.
Yeah, welcome home. He's got the certificate and all that. Yeah, and, you know, the Shire Secretary, the Shire President come and that. Well, I've got to say that I think they did, you know, got a hand to them. I think old Chip did a good job for them. And, you know, a lot of blokes could go back to school. My brother was lucky about that. He went back and did a university degree. And, then they could get housing and that, which, you know, they did look after them a bit better than they did in the First World War. But,
Did you think the soldier settlements were a good idea?
Well, like everything, some were and some weren't, you know, like it's when you've got bureaucrats running things, you know, some bloke in an office sitting in Melbourne and he's carving up land up in the Mallee or something, and he knows as much about it as a cow would know about Good Friday, you know, and, you know.
Is that on there?
That'll be on there, yeah, of course it is. Well, you know, that always, but the intentions were quite all right, I suppose. We were friends in New South Wales, you know, they've long since passed on. They had a huge big property there and got cut up twice, both World Wars, you know. And they were too small what they cut them up for, you know. They cut them up for 500 acre blocks or something, you know. It should have been 1500 at least, you know.
People that you know who've returned, have they talked about any bad memories? Was it all bad memories at war?
Well, don't think there'd be too many good. Well, they'd have their good ones, I suppose, but some of them wouldn't have too good. I think it's like say, Frank Dundas around here. He was a prisoner of war. I don't think poor old Frank would have too many good memories. He got some, you know, the Japs wasn't exactly the Hilton Hotel where they were stopping them. You know, they had him. You know, prisoner of war in the Burma Railway, or in the Burma Railway he was, so, you know.
Okay. Could you name any fellow Beaconsfield residents who went to war and what involvement they had?
Well, I had my two brothers. My eldest brother was trained for the air crew and he was New Guinea. I think they used to go over a wall. He was a navigator, you know. Bombing or whatever, navigator. And he was only very young when he went, like a lot of them, he was only 18, I suppose. And then my other brother went later on, he was in the Navy. He was stationed on Madang, I think it was, in New Guinea. Then he was on the Canimbla for a while. My older brother, though, he saw the war out. Never had a scratch till the war finished, and then they had two crashes in 2 days on the planes.
Oh.
Crashed in New Guinea, after the war had finished, crashed in New Guinea, and then they came back to Australia. They flew them back to Australia. He flew back to Australia to fly another plane back, and they come back and they just made Cape York Peninsula. There was a landing strip there, and they landed, and the one motor was broke down, you know, and it was the motor that worked the brakes or something other, and they went straight on off this landing strip into a great ditch at the end. He finished up with a fractured skull.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And I was just talking to him in March. He's very ill now in Western Australia, and he was telling us, he never said much, but he was saying that when the war finished, they were, like he was, they were coming home on planes, had to fly them home, you see, and he said these fighter pilot blokes were coming over, and they come over their camp where it was, and one bloke, something happened, two of them just touched, and they were strafing the camp, and two of them just touched wings, and they went into the thing. He said they never found one bloke for weeks later. And they went into the swamp and scrub and jungle and something, but Bill never ever said much, but it played up with him. He was never much good after. He was very nervous and a lot of ill health, and unfortunately he's just hanging on there to his life. But no, I don't think there was too many, had too many good times. Mm-hmm. Any of them.
Pat, from your own point of view, what were you doing during the war, during the Second World War?
Oh, I was 15. I left school when I was 15. I worked in the railway workshops at Newport. I worked in the boiler shop. There's a lot of work there they made all those Garrett locomotives. Well, made several of them, they were an abject failure. It was another bureaucratic bungle, if ever there was one. But we had to build them, and then the directing shop, they used to make parts for the Beaufort bombers, and they used to make We used to make those brim gun carriers, parts for tanks. We used to make shell cases. They made a lot of things in the workshops. No wonder the railways were crook after that, because half the thing was in the water.
Is there anything specific that happened during the Second World War that has stuck in your mind?
Oh, well, I think when it took a bad turn, and the Japanese, they sort of didn't know where they'd bombed Darwin, they didn't know where they were going to land. They shelled Sydney and they didn't know where they were going to land. There was all sorts of people were wondering where they were, what was going to happen. If they were going to get onto Australia, what would happen.
The people in Beaconsfield, were they a bit worried about
it? Oh, well, I don't know. I was in Melbourne at the time. I could only come home for the weekends and that occasionally, and I think everybody was a bit sort of edgy.
It sort of like come home all of a sudden. You thought it was all happening overseas.
Well, people thought, it's getting pretty close to here, near the war. And then, of course, I can remember I was in Melbourne, the Americans arrived. Then the Americans arriving here in Melbourne, a whole heap of them was one morning they wake up and there's about 25 boats or something out in the bay there. There's a whole lot of Americans arrived, from out of nowhere.
What did you think of the Americans?
Everybody thought, thank God somebody's coming to help us. Because General MacArthur arrived here about that time too, a bit before that, he arrived in Melbourne, his headquarters in Melbourne for quite a while.
Because there's some people who say that when the Americans came over, the Australian men didn't like it. There was some slogan that they had about the Americans, that they should be at home and they're taking our women and things like that.
Oh, well, there's always that about it, but still, there's probably that about it. But I think when you look at the cold, hard facts, I think America, they were here when we wanted them.
Yeah.
We've been always brought up on Britain to help everybody out, but Britain was flat out looking after themselves.
Yeah. Were there any shelters in Beaconsfield, any bomb shelters, just in case the Japanese did?
No, I don't think so. They had them in Melbourne, all designated places in the buildings, and it was all blackouts. Trams were blacked out, and cars were blacked out, and trains and all that sort of thing. They had only a little bit of a light on them there for a while. It was a very bad time. There was nothing out here, so stayed out. Like I always remember going on the railway, I had a bit dug up there in that hill at Hellam near the militia units used to be in there, and they had all barbed wire entanglements and things where they were training there, or whether it was just a thing, you don't know. They used to come through here at night, you'd wake up sometimes on a weekend and that be home, and there'd be a whole heap of them in the town here. They didn't know where they were at the palace, as far as that went. But Brigham Out Training was a big camp, Camp at Road. Put a little Italian prisoner rules in the way on. Well, there was a big camp at Rome. There was a camp in Dandenong, an army camp in Dandenong, a big camp at Rome, and they had a lot of Americans there at one time. They came, it was real cold, remember that? It must have been 1942. They came up Guadal Canal, they'd been hammered away at the Japs and poor blighted, a lot of them were full of malaria and Lord knows what, and they landed and put them up there, and gee, it was cold, and they were going to die like flies up there, and they had malaria, so come from the jungle to here, it was cold, it was cold, and, that old week here, real windy, wet, and cut.
Alright, now that you've had your brothers and your father come back from the Second World War, what's your attitude to war in general now that...
What's your attitude? Mm, yeah.
Did they...
Well, I don't know. I think it's... Nobody can win. Nobody wins. They're all... there's always somebody suffers. But it's... What is it? Well, there's been wars from time I don't know. I wouldn't know. If I knew, I'd probably be.
So you think it's a waste of time? Waste of
well, it isn't. It isn't. But then again, you know, there's arguments for and against, and I don't know. I think a lot of people, got, you know, they reckon a lot of blokes like Anzac Day, they only get booed and all that sort of thing. But they do. I know that. But you've got to, if you've been in the army, you sort of. Well, I've never been in active service or anything, but even in the army, you've got your mates and things like that, and that's all said and done. It's your mateship that gets you through, and your mates stick by you and all that, and that's what they think of. And I think a lot of people are misguided, maybe I am, but like my brother in Western Australia over there, and he went to the, took me out to the memorial, and he said, oh, look at all, he said, I've just got these all back on, all the names back on. He said, they've all been scratched and destroyed, and the rats at the Brook Memorial had been all destroyed just before Anzac Day, a couple of years ago. And he said, who was it? And they called him. No, it was women. It wasn't blokes, it was women. And they destroyed this monument, you know, and the blokes had put it in the, because the rats at the Brook one, they'd put their own money into it, like all the fellas. And I think they're, you know, pretty misguided in a lot of ways because, gee, they got their point, I suppose, it's democracy. But I tell you what, the bloody chaps that have got in, it would have been a different story. And that's what I think about, you know, Japan, I don't know. I know you're supposed to love your neighbour and all that sort of thing, but. And, you know, forgive and that, but how can you forgive when they hand out such things to some of the fellows? You know? And I don't think, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't really know. Well, it was the saddest thing we had here. Jack Dawson, he was a station master's son, he and his mother. There was Jack and his two sisters. Well, at the fall of Singapore, they got word to say Jack had been wounded or something, and they didn't know. And they used to keep sending messages out to say he was all right. These Japs used to broadcast. And then they didn't know till well into the war, and they torpedoed those boats going to Japan. And they got all these fellas that he'd died long before that, and he was his mother waiting, thinking.
And they just kept...
Kept sending those... broadcasting these messages to say that he was all right and all that, and, you know, and these people would be listening and hear it, and they used to tell Mrs. Dawson, you know, that really, you know, she sort of kept up thinking about poor Jack and he'd been dead, you know, good while. Then there was a bloke from Upper Pakenham, I remember him, he was, when the war finished, you know, they got him out. Like he was, but he died, didn't come home. He died, he was too far gone, you know. He was married like he was,
yeah. Is there anything you'd like to add that went on in Beaconsfield while the Second World War was on?
Oh, all I can think of, old Dick Cole, the butcher. He, you know, the blokes had come home on leave and that, and he used to always say, don't worry, he said, you know, it was all coupons for meat and that. Oh, don't worry about it, I'll get you some meat, he said. He said, I'm always hundreds of coupons beyond what the meat I've sold, you know. But he'd always say, don't worry, them blokes come home. He said, oh, you know, you can get meat, you know, maybe a leg of lamb or something like that. You know, hard to go on old Dick. And he was a First World War bloke returned. And, you know, a lot of people like that, they were a pretty close-knit community, it was, when you work it out, really.
Thank you very much for... taking part in this interview today and letting me come into your house. Thanks very much for that.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you here. It's
very good.
That's right.
And that concludes my interview with Mr. and Mrs. Bruce Adamson of Beaconsfield. Although Bruce himself didn't go to fight in the war, he did go to Darwin just after the war, ready for anything else that might happen. But he's given me a lot of information on his brothers, and what they did at war, and a few of the residents and how the attitudes were of the people in Beaconsfield at the time of the Second World War. And from the interview I can see that the Beaconsfield residents were a close-knit group, everyone helping each other, backing up the soldiers when they came back and before they went and during the war. From the emotion that Bruce showed in the interview, I can see that the war hit people really hard, even those who didn't go to war. The memories of the friends that died and the friends that they never saw again. And then there was the people who were there and keep battling on and helping everyone stick together. Thank you for listening.